Eric Metaxas here. Please join me in a life-saving mission to set Sudanese slaves free through Christian Solidarity International. Since 1995, CSI has freed more than 100,000 women and children from years of bondage and abuse. Your $250 gift frees, feeds, and heals these captives and sets them on a path to a new life in freedom. Please help us free another slave now. Call 888-253-3522, 888-253-3522, or click the CSI banner at MetaxasTalk.com, MetaxasTalk.com.
Hi, welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. I just found out I'm supposed to be someplace else right now. So my sincere apologies, but I simply won't be able to introduce today's host, Mr. Eric Metaxas.
Hey there, folks. Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. You'll notice that I have my own private Mount Rushmore here set up in the bunker. My Mount Rushmore, of course, includes Ben Franklin, who's rudely kept off of the original Mount Rushmore. And then, of course, Mike Lindell, the American hero, and then George Washington, who is also on the real Mount Rushmore. And then, of course, me, the biggest head of all, if you know what I'm saying. Now, the reason that Mike Lindell is here is because, as you know, he's a friend of mine and because he sent me a bobblehead of himself. And so it would be rude for me not to have the bobblehead as part of this. But I thought, wouldn't it be great if instead of me talking to the bobblehead, which I often do on this program, what if I could get the guy behind the bobblehead? It's very rare. When somebody becomes so famous that there's a bobblehead of them, typically that person becomes untouchable. Not Mike Lindell. He's a friend. He decided he would still come on the program, even though the bobblehead is, you know, sort of good enough. He says, no, 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 I'll do it for you, Eric. And so here he is, my friend, the man behind my pillow, Mike Lindell. Mike, welcome to the program.
Well, it's good to be here. Hold on, let me get my head on.
Stop that. Now, listen, seriously, you crack me up no matter what I talk to you about. But let's for people who don't know you, and I believe they exist. Well, actually, I don't believe that those people exist anymore because you're ubiquitous. But you are most famous for inventing the pillow that's called My Pillow, which became a whole company which sells all kinds of stuff. You are the main advertiser on my show, so I want to tell people they have to use the code ERIC or I'm coming after them. But your story, Mike, which I've talked to you about before, is so amazing. I kept thinking, why don't you write a book about it? And you did. You finally did write a book about it, which is also available at mypillow.com, correct?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Using your promo code.
Using the promo code Eric, if you want the discount, okay?
Right.
But Mike, seriously, your story is so wild. What persuaded you finally to get it down in the pages of a book? Because you're so all over the place that I cannot imagine you writing a book. Did you have somebody following you with a microphone?
Well, it actually took 7 years, and I had five different people help me at different times. And finally, it came down to me almost going word for word because I was so particular. I wanted this story to bring people hope that all my, and you know, I kept evidence. It's in the book of everything that happened to me that, so people go, this isn't even true. There's no way. It's like you read this book and it's this, you're living inside of a movie and going, this can't be true. And then you go, wow, this is true. Here's the evidence, evidence, evidence. And by the time you read the book, if you don't believe in God, you didn't read the book. But I really wanted to bring people hope that with God, anything is possible. And I would have probably had it done, years ago, but things kept happening. I'm going, I got to have this. And the whole shift of the book kind of shift where my insecurities as a kid, coming from a divorced family when I was 7 years old, when divorces weren't common, I was thrown into a school. And I was the only fatherless kid at the time. Or, I mean, not fatherless, but from a split, you know, a divorced family. And I manifested either I wouldn't talk to people or I would show up. So, you know, the book kind of went in, you know, I was like that. I was kind of introverted. You don't get rejected if you don't talk to people. But, and even from the first time, Eric, that you interviewed me,
yeah.
I, you know, now I've kind of, it keeps getting easier and easier for me to talk to people, you know?
You, when I interviewed you at the National Religious Broadcasters a few years ago, it was one of the most fun experiences of my life. And anybody who was in that room, there was hundreds of people watching me try to interview you in quotes, because you are, I said it was like trying to wrestle two bears on the stage. I don't know what happened because you're your own character. You're amazing. But you know, Mike, I want to focus just in case people miss this. Your story, part of it is really heartbreaking, and some of it is so inspiring. It is almost unbelievable. You were addicted to crack. We're not saying this lightly, like you were right. Sort of addicted. I mean, you were utterly addicted to crack, and in a way, the center of your story is these three crack pushers, the right. dealers.
Right.
Believing in you more than you believed in yourself. I mean, it's one of those things that sounds, when I tell my friends, yeah, it's like I'm making it up. But right. So that's kind of the culmination of you inventing the pillow and all this stuff happening, and you finally becoming a Christian. But in this book, you do go into the backstory of how you got to that place to be right. addicted to crack, even with a family.
Right, right. Absolutely. You know, it goes... You go back in the early 80s where I was addicted to gambling, compulsive gambling, cocaine, alcohol, and then that changed to crack in around 2000. And I had these two pair, almost like a double life. You know, the one thing throughout that whole time, I was a little different than what you would think of a normal addict, as I never broke my trust, my word. I kept my word, which is rare being in this addictive world, but I could, you know, the addiction I was in, I would kind of keep them separate. And that's the one thing when I was out of everything that day in January 16, 2009, when I quit everything overnight, the one thing I still had left was a little bit of my trust. People trusted me, at least the shows and the stuff I had done with my pillow. I kept that separate. And just when I worked, I worked. When I was all holed up with my addictions, I was addiction. And
you are a high functioning addict. I mean, what I find, again, I find it almost funny now that I know that there's a happy ending. I can find it funny. But you shared with me that you invented this pillow that has made you, you know, a household name and wealthy. You invented this while you were addicted to that drug. I mean, to many people, that's not conceivable.
Yeah, especially if you've been a crack addict. You know, the with crack in general, they didn't make a joke like, hey, what do you want? And everyone knows, what do you want, crack? I mean, it was almost a joke because it was they call it the devil's candy. And when I did invent my pillow in 2004, you know, I went all in on that. And one of the things that happened, Eric, was I was turned down everywhere, every box store, everybody turned me down. But when I did the first home show, something interesting happened is the people that I put a table between me and the public so I could talk to them. So I felt kind of my safe zone, and they had an agenda when they came up, and I tell them about this pillow. Well, the next day after that, all these people came back. I couldn't believe it. Almost everyone I sold a pillow to, and they were coming down the aisle going, oh, you know, didn't they like it? And they paid to get back in the show. They came up and they told me what a difference in their life it made them and how it changed them. And I felt good inside about me that I had done something worthy, and it wasn't about the money. So I almost became addicted to helping people. I just loved it, you know. And I think that was part of my driver, and besides God protecting me from myself, many times chasing me. It got up to the point with those drug dealers that did do that intervention. I mean, when people, they can't wrap their head around that. And I'm going to say something real quick. I was up 14 days and I had no sleep.
This story is too crazy. I want to get to it in the next segment because I don't want to interrupt it. But
okay,
Let's set it up. You are, you're married, you have kids. You are working on inventing a pillow. That alone, Mike, you got to understand, people like me, I never really had pillow problems. So to me, the idea of inventing a pillow, I remember teasing you about it. It's like inventing a towel, or like, what do you mean you invented a pillow?
Yeah, I just did that.
you also invented a towel. We've covered that. But it's almost funny to me that you were obsessing, and you are sort of obsessive in a good way, and it could be a bad way too, right? But you are obsessing on this idea of creating a pillow that worked for you, because for you, it really was a genuine, huge, life-ruining problem, and you managed to go through it. So when we come back, I want to hear about that. I want to hear about these drug pushers that wouldn't let you buy drugs. Folks, you're not going away. I'm talking to Mike Lindell.
Love is a burning thing, and it makes a fiery ring.
Folks, welcome back. I'm talking to Mike Lindell. You may know him if you have a TV in your home because he's always there. It's like it's the Mike Lindell show that gets interrupted by news segments or something like that. But I found out that it's actually a news show interrupted by Mike doing his advertisements. Mike, not only do you do advertisements, but you interrupt your own advertisement. That was my favorite advertisement. But people know you as the inventor of My Pillow. You're perpetually cheerful, and you really are that way. But you have some dark stuff in your story. You put it in your new book. What's the title of the book?
It's called What Are the Odds from Crack Addict to CEO?
What are the odds from crackhead to CEO? Okay, so let's go back. You were going to share that you're in this obsessive way trying to figure out how to invent a pillow that does what? I mean, let's
right.
be clear.
Well,
what was your pillow problem? Because I know for you it was a real problem.
Right. Well, you know, it was a problem-solution thing. I'm going, how come I'm going to see a chiropractor every 3 days? I'd be right back. My neck would be all screwed up again. And I knew it was the pillow. I had tried every pillow from fiberfill to hollowfill to memory foam to down. They ended up on this pillow pile stacked up like cordwood, and nothing worked. And it was all about, I knew it was all about height. You know, I'd use my arm would be asleep, or I'd stack pillows and they'd collapse. So I wanted something that you could move and it would hold there. So the adjustability to me was, but I wanted it to be soft, but yet hold my height. And I kept getting these dreams, and I wouldn't give up. Me and my son, we'd sit on the back deck for days, and we tear stuff. There'd be foam flying around the neighborhood. We tried over 94 different kinds of foams and fills to go in the pillow. Now, all my friends said, you know, what are you crazy? What are you on crack? You know, I mean, it just, they thought it was nuts, you know.
I think both of those things are true. I think
right.
crazy, and I know you were on crack, but it doesn't matter because you succeeded.
Right. But I wouldn't give up. And finally, we had it to where, wow, it works and it would hold. And then I wanted even more. I go, you know what? I wanted to do everything. The problems I had too, I wanted it to stay cool. I wanted it to give people value. And so I wanted to put a 10-year warranty on this patented fill. People, I told my friends I'm going to get a patent. They laughed. You're not going to get a patent on a pill. They've been around forever. Well, this patented fill, I finally spent 2 months. I actually spent the last dollars I ever had in the world making it so you could wash and dry the pill. I mean, you couldn't wash and dry pillows back then. It would ruin them. So I was so intense on micromanaging each detail and then macromanaging the pillow to get it to get this amazing thing to fruition rather than sell it short. And I wanted to, you know, and then I put out, it's funny, I finally had it made and I walked into Beyond in Minnesota here and I said, first store I stopped and he said, I have the best pillow ever made. I said, where's your manager? Where's your buyer? This is great. He goes, you need to leave now. You know, like get out of my store, you nut job, you know? And that was totally turned down everywhere until finally someone said, Mike, why don't you try a kiosk? I said, how do you spell kiosk? What is it? I didn't know what it was. You know?
Now, before we get into that, should we go to the story? You were referencing earlier that in part of this madness, because of cocaine, you stayed up day after day. You did not sleep for how many days?
It was 14 days, and this was crack. And what happened was, you know, from the time I invented my pill in 2004, I ended up doing shows and fairs for, you know, every year following that. But I also, during that time, I lost a 20-year marriage. I had people taking my pillow, copying it. They were doing, these are people I broke bread with. There was so much betrayal. And don't get me wrong, there was a lot of stuff that was my own fault personally where I got myself into. But these things, there was so much betrayal, people seeing an opportunity and taking, because this guy's on drugs and I'm going to steal this from him or whatever it was. Well, it got to be 2008. Now I lost everything, and it was the spring of 2008. Up 14 days, had a warrant out for my arrest, which I was found innocent of.
Now, excuse me, I still have to interrupt. When you say you're up for 14 days, I once heard, you know, that Keith Richards, who is famous for being the biggest druggie on planet Earth, was once up 11 days.
Right.
You beat the record. You beat Keith Richards by 3 days.
If you're in the addiction world, I mean, a lot of addicts, when you say that to them, it sounds crazy, which it is, but one day led to the next, and then you can keep these artificial crack in your system and you know, to keep you up. Now, why I didn't die, I don't know, but I will tell you, I walked out, it was in Minneapolis, downtown Minneapolis. I come walking out of the bedroom, and here's all three of the biggest drug dealers standing there. I'm going, what are you guys doing? You know each other? They had never met each other. They knew of each other's groups, right? And they said,
biggest drug dealers in Minneapolis gathered to confront you.
Right. And I said, they said, Mike, you've been up 14 days. We're cutting you off. And I go, what is this, an intervention? And they go, call it whatever you want, Mike. And two of them left. Now, I find out one of them went down to the streets to get the word out. You sell to this white guy with a mustache, this crazy white guy with a mustache, will kill you. You know, they got the word out. You're not selling to
Mike,
him.
Mike, this is, again, I will never cease to get over this. These drug dealers in the city, these are scary people making money from selling drugs, decided, the three of them, to stop you from buying drugs. Why would they do that?
Well, here's what happened then. So I waited the one out. He sat in the chair to wait me out. I said, how much crack you have left? And I showed him. Finally, he got, you know, he fell asleep. And then before he was falling asleep, I'm scraping my pipe. I'm on the floor, carpet farming, they call it, looking for pieces. I'm coming off a 14-day. I need this crack. Finally, I'm looking over, and he went to sleep. I head down at 2:30 in the morning in the streets of Minneapolis. Now, they had gotten the word out, and I couldn't buy crack. These are people in the streets, addicted, dealing, everything. And I'm going, hey, I want, $20 for $5 worth. I tried everything. I'm very resourceful, but I couldn't get it. I came back upstairs an hour later, defeated. And here's what he said to me. He goes, you know, give me that phone of yours. I'm taking a picture of you. He said, you've been telling us for years you're going to write some book. And he said, and you've been telling us that my pillow is just a platform for God. And you're going to come back and help us someday get out of this addiction lifestyle we're leading. And we're not going to let you die on us. Eric, I was their hope. I told them that all the time, my friends and stuff. I have this big platform, and someday I'm going to come back and help you all. Two of them work for me now. They're born-again Christians, work for my pillow.
Mike, let me tell you, the reason your story is so beautiful is because it's so honest and because it breaks every category. In other words, here you are trying to do something for God while you're an addict, right? Yeah. And there's a lot of people would say, well, you couldn't possibly be trying to do something for God. You're addicted. You need to get off that. You need to get. But just to show how messy life is and how it happens sometimes, in the midst of this ugliness, on the other side of your conversion, on the other side of your success, there was still a part of you that was trying to do something. You would talk about God, even though you didn't seem to be a very good representative.
Right. I would do, you know, I owned a bar for 13 years, not a good place for an addict. And after the bars were closed, you could ask all my friends from back then, by the way, that are saved now. And I would tell them at night, I would go after the bars, like, hey, you guys, you know, I read about the end time revelation. I read about God. And when I was in jail, that's when I would read the Bible. You know, I had good seeds planted when I was a kid, but I'd always, whenever I was in jail to get my license back or whatever for DWIs, I would tell my friends all about, you know, hey, we got to get off these drugs. And you know, I'm telling them about these, like, I tell them about what I read in the Bible. And they would quit 28 people we can know that quit during that time. They'd quit and either find Jesus, but for sure quit drugs or alcohol. And my friends are going, Mike, will you quit talking? We're losing friends here. You know, it was like, but that was me, Eric, that was me. I believe I look back now when I talk, and even when I have my meetings, my board meetings and my pillows, I'll be talking and I'm trying to convince myself. It's almost like I talk through things. So I was trying to get to Jesus myself by telling them about it. And I'm not even saved myself. And this came up a real short thing here. When my pillow, when I was the only call center, it was just my cell phone. If people called me from orders after the shows, I'd have people call me up, especially when they started seeing me on TV wearing my cross. They're going, you're wearing your cross on TV. And they'd be yelling at me. And I would sit there and I would start talking. It could be an atheist. By the time I was with them, they'd find Jesus. And I go, there, take that. And I'm not even saved yet.
What's funny, Mike, is it calls into question, you know, we sometimes have these religious ideas that one day you're not saved, the next day you're saved. But I think sometimes, and your life seems to be an example of this, it's not so clear. In other words, God was still speaking to you and working through right. you. Clearly, you weren't where he wanted you to be, but right. he was still able to use you. I'm just fascinated by that. When we come back, more with Mike Lindell. If you order anything from MyPillow and you don't use the code Eric, I'm coming after you. Folks, I'm talking to Mike Lindell. And when I say Mike Lindell, you're thinking, oh, the bobblehead, Eric, you're talking to the bobblehead Mike Lindell. No. Today, my friends, I have the man behind the bobblehead, the actual man, Mike Lindell. Mike, your story is so crazy. I want to go to this point where these drug dealers believe in you so much. It's hard to believe because you think of them as these are bad people, but they believe in you. They have hope in you. They cut you off from the drugs they're selling you because they want you to succeed. I mean, this is like made up. This is a movie, and it should be a movie. What happens at this point? When do you finally get off drugs?
Well, this was March of 2008, and a couple of things happened in 2008 that I believe had to happen, those pieces that finally for the day I quit. But what happened is my son, he came. He was in the driveway. He got back on a hunting trip, and he was stopped. He wouldn't go in. And I said, well, what's, and he was 18. And I said, well, what's going on? And he says, I want to go live with my brother. And that hurt me so much inside because I thought I was hiding my addiction. You know, one of these, the classic, you know, everyone else is looking, look at the dysfunction, but I can't see it for myself. But that hurt. And then it got to December of 08 and something very interesting happened. It was getting near the end, so to speak. And I was losing the second house, and everything was going down. My pillow was just almost flatline, just a little blip once in a while when I would decide to do a show. But my friend showed up out of the blue. His name was Dick Van Sloan, and Dick shows up, and he says, and he was my equal, Eric. He was we had both started cocaine in the early 80s, switched to crack in the early 2000s. He was a very functioning addict like I was, and he was my equal in every way. And he had been successful. He had successes and failures, but he had been clean for 4 years. I had heard about it somehow that he had fell in the Lord. And I'm going, and I hadn't seen him. And he just pops in like, I go, Dick, what are you doing here? He goes, what are you doing? He says, the Lord led me here. And I said, well, as long as you're here, I have some questions. I said, the first question I asked him was, is it boring? And he said, no, man, it ain't boring. And I drilled him for.
What do you mean? You mean is being a Christian boring?
Well, no, I didn't know if at that time was it being a Christian or was it being not being on drugs or alcohol, you know? But I kept at him with questions for about an hour, and he got up and disappeared as much as he when he got there. And that was on middle of December of 08. Now 1 month later, on January 16, 2009. I knew, and people say, was that your bottom, Mike? And I said, I made sure that I knew, or that day that I had nothing left money-wise. So with God, I'd show this great comeback, and I knew that God had this big calling for me. Well, with this calling, I that day I said, God, I want to wake up in the morning and never have the desire again for any of my addictions, the alcohol, the drugs, and then I'll do this platform or this calling. But what it was is people say, was that your bottom? What it was, I used to work at a drive-in movie theater, and in the book I explain it. I knew at that point that there was the second feature of my life was going to start that next day. And the second feature of this drive-in movie, the real A would be my calling. Real B, the second or the other movie would be wherever life would take me down that dark path. And if I waited one more day, real A was not a choice anymore. That choice would be gone forever.
You just knew this somehow.
Yeah, I knew it with every part of me. And I quit that night. I woke up the next morning and I go, wow, something's different. It was like Groundhog Day. And you know, the music were playing, the lights were on, everything was going. I even looked in the mirror. I go, wow, I don't look too bad for all these years of addiction. You know, it's just like God transformed me. At least the desire was gone. Now I want to say, that was a miracle in itself. I've never, ever had the desire again. But two months later, I felt led to go to our church, where they had a treatment center there called Living Free. And I went in there and I told the counselor the night before our class started, his name was Rafe. I said, I used to be a crack addict and I used to be an addict. And I said, but I'm going to have this MyPillow thing. I invented this pillow. It's going to change the world. It's going to be a platform for God. I'm going to have a movie someday. I'm going to have a foundation. It's going to help the world. And he went home and told his wife, he said, this guy came in higher than a kite.
But that's the point. That's kind of the point. Like when anybody gets to know you, we're thinking like this guy on drugs. Like no, that's you don't need you. If anybody doesn't need drugs, I mean, anyway. But so, but you're kind of manic. You're kind of manic in a good way.
Right. Well, what happened, and I tell people I was the same on or off, you know, the energy, you know, now I'm high on life, high on Jesus. Well, anyway, the first night of that class, now I had been to secular treatment centers in the 80s. It was a little game we played. You get a DWI, you go to treatment to get your license back and you don't have to go to jail. It was, I mean, we all did it. And you know, if you ran in a ditch with your car, you reported it stolen. It was a big game we played with the drinking back then and then the drugs. And lucky and unfortunately, I never got caught with drugs ever. But anyway, I get in there and I'm bragging up on what I used to do in the treatment center. Yeah, I did all these drugs. And he goes, oh, we don't care what you did. We don't care about your bond part. We tell us about your father. I go, what do you mean, my father? I was a good upbringing. And he goes, I said, well, my parents divorced when I was 7. And he starts digging into these wounds from childhood. And then I'm going, wow, things that happen in childhood, this is why I firmly believe addiction's not a disease. It's wounds that come in that, you know, whether it's father wounds or trauma that happens when you're a kid, it can take one thing that manifests into I'm not worthy. I'm not good enough. The devil's lies that get in there and that you get, then you get drugs and other addictions that mask pain or that give you false courage. And anyway, those planted the seeds.
Forgive me. We're going to go to a quick break here. Okay. Folks, I'm talking to Mike Lindell. You're not going away.
Albin, I always talk about Relief Factor, but sometimes it's better to hear from somebody else. So today we're going to hear from Anne. Here she is.
It has changed my life is the only thing I can say. Been exercising for years. My shoulder is in bad, bad shape. It's swelling. It hurts. It goes numb during the night. Well, I heard about Relief Factor on the radio, and I'd been hearing testimonies for a couple of years, and I said, I'm going to order Relief Factor because I need help. I was sleeping sitting up for 5 years with pillows in my back, and now I'm sleeping flat on my back with one pillow.
This is amazing. I beg my relatives to take this. I was at a wedding recently. I'm begging them. I'm saying, look, you've got aches and pains. Take this. In 3 weeks, you'll know if it works for you. You're crazy not to try it. And by the way, it's cheap. Like, that's the whole idea. That's why it's like, you know, sweeping the nation, because people can afford to take it.
Yes.
Go to relieffactor.com. Get the quick start pack for $19.99. Check it out. 3 weeks. Relieffactor.com.
Look, folks. I'm talking to Mike Lindell. You know him from My Pillow. You won't recognize him today because he's not wearing the silky blue shirt. Mike, how can you not be wearing the silky blue shirt? It's like you're wearing a disguise. I never would know who you were.
You know, I started wearing that on TV, and it just stuck. I said, people would go, where's your shirt? If one time I didn't wear it, they go, why didn't you wear your shirt and your cross? You know? So it's, but when you talk about TV, to finish where I was, I spent 2 years then, after I got out of that little treatment center, that outpatient, and these seeds were planted. But I didn't do a full surrender there to Jesus, and that's what their goal was there, to get you help. Well, 2 years I spent getting my pillow back because they had this company come out, copied the pillow and this counterfeit, copied the name. They had taken my dream, taken all my shows. So I fought back for 2 years. But then in 2011, I told my friends and family, you know what? If nobody will take us, no box stores, let's do an infomercial. It's going to be the biggest one in history. And they're going, okay, well, sure, Mike, you know, but I convinced them and we all put our money in. I didn't know infomercials and commercials, they don't work. It's to get into the box stores. And the box stores didn't want me, but nobody told me that. So I'm going to just go right to the people. We went to film this in August of 11. And the night before, now remember, I had a phobia about speaking in public and I was scared to death, especially now, I'm 2 years off of drugs. And we were doing our reads the night before. This producer texts the other guy. He said, this guy's the worst guy I've ever seen. He'll never make it on TV. And he goes, oh, just be quiet. He's paying you. Humor him. And so here they bring in, we go to do it the next day, and there's an audience, and I'm scared to death. And I'm praying. I go, God, please, please let me, you know, not be afraid of the people. But I was, and I was. And so we brought in a table and threw away the teleprompter and did it like I did it at the shows all those years. And it aired October 7, 2011. I was living with my sister in her basement, or living in the basement of my sister's house. And it aired. I had about 10 employees. 40 days later, I had 500 employees. It just exploded. Now, I'm going to fast forward. My pillow got so big, but by the summer of 2014, I was within 2 days of going under. People had taken advantage. I had made mistakes, let other people do my things, my media stuff and all this. I pulled everything in-house, but at the same time, I met a gal, her name is Kendra, and she had something I didn't have, and I knew it. She had a personal relationship with Jesus. And she going, I go, I believe in God. What do you mean? And we'd be talking, and she's praying for favor, praying for all these things for my pillow. And by the grace of God, we got through that. And then things start. My book is called What Are the Odds? And there's a reason for that. When you take in your own life, anybody out there, and you say, this is a one in a million, this is a one in a billion, this could never happen. When you add them together, when you consider them a miracle, well, God was chasing me all that time, and I got complacent. I'm going, oh, I'll get through this. Oh, please, God, let me get a reactive prayer. God, let me get through this. And all the time I would, but I still didn't surrender. Well, then things started happening in 2015, 16, and 17. Things like Donald Trump invited me, I didn't know anything about politics, to New York City on August 15, 2016, to meet him in a private meeting. They say, whatever you do, Mike, don't tell them about your crack, and you're not going to be in there alone. Well, I was alone, and one of the first things I said, yeah, I used to be a crack addict, and we talked about inner cities, all these things. Well, anyway, I went all in, as everybody knows, because I knew that's what God wanted me to do. Well, and my friends are seeing me on TV sitting next to the President of the United States and going, what is this crack addict sitting there? This next crack addict, Jesus, has to be real because it's impossible. And these were the things for me that all these things had happened, including, you know, I went to a national prayer breakfast and I got pulled out of 12 people to pray with Ben Carson. They said, a couple of you in this room are going to become best friends and help change the world. He's one of my best friends now. I mean, things like this. And I'm going, okay, God, show me more. Show me more. Gets up to get this, everybody. Everybody ready. You all see me wearing my cross on TV. February 18th, 2017. I went into, it's called Operation Restored Warrior. It's actually for veterans. And by grace of God, I got in there by a divine appointment. And I went in there with hope that I could get that personal relationship. And on the second day of February 18th, 2017, I did a full surrender. Got on my knees. God, I'm giving it all to you. And it, from that point on, it was just a, it was a miracle. I walked out of there and I'm going, now I can go out like I did. I went to US Bank Stadium, 50,000 millennials, and led them in prayer. And there was this big Christian event, and spoke for 5 minutes of my story. 3 weeks later, me and my granddaughter at an amusement park, and all these millennials that were there and these kids are coming up going, I was saved. I found Jesus because of what you said. That was God confirming to me that I am finally getting to fulfill my calling, which is not my pillow and stuff. It's to be an evangelist, to reach out and reach out and be part of the biggest revival in history, which I believe addiction is an opportunity of a lifetime for the biggest revival. Who's looking for hope more than addicts?
Oh, I love this. There's so much here. Mike, we've just got a couple minutes left in this segment. Tell us about this recovery, the online thing you've been working on. Right. This is amazing.
Right. This is, we're going to announce it September 26th at the thing called The Return in Washington, D.C. But what it is, this online platform, it's not just online, but what it is, it's going to be the best help in history for addiction there ever was. And we're going to launch it then. It involves hundreds of thousands of churches that I've vetted. It involves over 5,000 faith-based treatment centers. But there's also this online help that I've, you know, one of the things too, remember what I told you about Dick earlier in the show? When he came to me, he was my hope match. One of the things, my audience or my product or my person I'm after is the addict, not the addict's families. I'm not out to bring in the addicts. I'm saying, oh, your addict has a disease. I'm reaching to the addicts because you know what? I'm going to have all these videos, not of people's bottoms. An addict doesn't care about someone else's bottom. They see either I'm worse than them or I'm not as bad as them. But an addict wants to see all people their own age and the same drug they've did, the commonality of the drug, and they've all made it through. That's their hope. These are hope matches. It's going to be amazing. You know, I bring hope to a lot of people, but I'm, you know, 59 years old and an ex specific to crack, gambling, alcohol. Now, if you have a 20-year-old heroin addict, he might relate somewhat to that, but he can certainly relate to someone. Everybody knows someone that's died now from addiction, but they also know someone that's made it through. And we're gonna match them up and say, God, here you go.
God is using you in all kinds of ways. We're gonna be right back. Folks, if you go to mypillow.com, please use the code Eric. I'm Eric. We'll be right back. Someone's knocking at the door. Somebody's ringing the bell. Do me a favor. Open the door. Folks, welcome back. I'm talking to my friend Mike Lindell. Mike, honestly, tell me the title of your book again. What are the odds?
What are the odds from crack addict to CEO?
When I think of your story, the reason it's so beautiful is because everybody's story is similar. The odds against any of us existing, right, succeeding, having a relationship with God, the odds are zero. And yet, miraculously, God loves us so much, he doesn't care about the odds. He right. works with every one of us where we are. Your story, honestly, it's so amazing to me. And it's amazing because I've known you for a few years now. And what you were just sharing is that even, you know, a lot of times people think like, well, if I have success in business, I make money, that's what I want. And I got off drugs, I'm done. You're just beginning. You want right. to do so much for your fellow man and for the God that loves you and them. And, you know, I can't help get excited about that because I'd like to see what it is that God's going to do through you.
Yeah. You know, like you said, way back when I said my pillow is just a platform and it keeps surprising me every day. You know, I'm going, what? You know, wow, more doors keep opening up. And I want to tell everyone out there, that's not, you know, when you say what are the odds, it's like, look at your own life and see the little miracles, the one in a million, the one in billions. And everyone, you know, when we talked about earlier, I could use my past and hide it. I've kind of put addiction right out in the open. And addiction isn't just an addict on the street that you think of, this down and out addict. It's everyone. No matter how many forks you eat with, you're affected by addiction. And people don't realize they only, you know, to get close to God, they're going, it's usually something bad has to happen. One guy told me once, you know, it's going to take the Great Depression. We took God out of our schools and God out of our country, God out of the people. And I said, no, I said it in the Great Depression, they had God, but they were praying for physical things, food and shelter. We have something even better. We have addiction because everyone's looking for your souls. You're looking for, you're praying for souls, and everybody's affected, like I said, in all walks of life. But then along came this pandemic, so now everybody's looking for hope. And we have this, I believe, because of what has been set up here, we are in the times of the biggest revival in history. And it is because of these that people are going to come to God in the masses and everyone out there, use your own life to get out in ministry and spread the word, because I've been attacked because I put my faith right out there. I've been attacked because I stand up for what I believe in. And, you know, every time I do that, I get rewarded more because I'm standing up for God. And my busiest day always at my pillow is the day we're in.
I just love it. You know, your energy is infectious, and I think that it really is beautiful to see, to me, how your story. I mean, the main reason I wanted to have you on today is to tell your story because you've written a book about it. And again, the idea that you finally got down and you wrote a book, and the book has. Tell us about this. It's like it's your mugshot, so you look horrible.
Right.
It flips.
It's a hologram on the front cover, and that's that when they did that drug dealer intervention. That picture was taken when I was up 14 days, and I wanted to show it something that hadn't been done before on a book, and it turns into where I'm at today. You talk about transformation, that's unheard of, but, you know, just choo-choo.
It's a before and after. Yeah. The title of the book is What Are the Odds? People can get it at mypillow.com. I'm begging them to use the code Eric because we need the money on the Eric Metaxas Show. But I got to say, it's just a joy to talk to you. I'll keep talking to you, but that ends hour one. Mike Lindell, God bless you. Thank you.
Thank you. God bless you. And God bless you all out there.